Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 17,
Episode 35.
This is Writing Excuses, Dialogue Masterclass, Episode 8, Nuances of Dialogue.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Dan.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Maurice.
And I'm Howard.
And we have come at last to the final episode in our class. Thank you, Maurice, for being here and teaching us so much about dialogue. We're going to end with what might be one of the more complicated ones, nuance. Nuances of dialogue. What do we mean by nuance? We talked about subtext last time. How is nuance different?
Well, nuance are some of the different aspects of dialogue that partly ties into characterization, but it's just what's some of the little effects that we have to consider when we're talk about dialogue.
Oh, so, you're talking about nuance at the meta level rather than nuance as an aspect of the words on the page.
I think it's very much both.
Perhaps one way to think of this, subtext is the characters mm-hmm. communicating extra information. Nuance is the writer, perhaps, communicating extra information through dialogue.
Right. So all these sort of things have to inform my choices as a creative. You know, every time I sit down and write a new story. So I wrote this short story not too long ago called The Norwood Trouble. And it's all about, there's a community here in Indianapolis, this is actually real history. There was a self-sufficient, free Black community. It was established right after the Civil War. And there was basically a functioning, independent city within Indianapolis that lasted until about 1950. And I'm like just now discovering the city, this history, and all those kind of other things, right? So I write this story, and I share it with a couple friends. And one of the things they say is that, hey, in Norwood, we wouldn't speak this way. The English seems a little on the formal side, and so we wouldn't speak this way. And then he goes into some of the accent dialect of people who are native to Norwood. And I'm like, you are absolutely correct, but my story is absolutely correct also. And he was like, well, why is that? And I'm like, because if you, the story is a frame, there's a frame story where it's obvious the main person is talking to someone who's trying to record this hidden history. So it's a native talking to an outsider. And what happens is that as the narrator, they code switch because they're talking to an outsider. And so now their language is different. And so there's like one moment where they slip in terms of how they communicate. And talk like they would naturally, but then they catch themselves and go back to having code switched because they're speaking to an outsider. And so that's what I mean. It's a nuanced thing that I have to be aware of at the meta level, because I can't just be haphazard in what I'm doing here. But then the character themselves has to be aware of it. Like, oh, I'm speaking to an outsider, therefore I need to be conscious of how I speak.
Yeah. So this is really about how to make the voice distinct and appropriate for both the story and the character who's speaking. Like when I wrote Of Noble Family, which is set in Antigua, I wanted, and I had, there's a ton of enslaved Antiguan people as characters in the story. And I wrote the dialogue the way I would hear it for someone of that class in the U.S., but the U.S. is not Antigua. There's very different nuances. And so I had an Antiguan author, Joanne Hillhouse, whose work you should read. I had her rewrite all of my dialogue because I knew that there was no way that I was going to be able to get the nuance of those characters. Just the sound, the disapproving sound that one makes is different. So when you're thinking about the nuance, a lot of times you can hit that yourself, you can do it yourself, but sometimes you need to bring in someone from the outside. Like I also get astronauts to help me. Here's a fun piece of nuance. Instead of saying down the rabbit hole, an astronaut is likely to say, yeah, I know this because they said it. Yeah, I was up all night because I fell down the internet gravity well.
let me give an example of doing this poorly. My book, Ghost Station, which is about Berlin in the Cold War. I knew the culture sort of as an expat living in Germany for a while, but I also knew, as Mary Robinette suggested, that I needed to have some people with much, much closer to that context read it. So I had some friends from Germany. I even had a friend from who grew up in East Germany read this for me. What I did not do is have a friend from Berlin read this for me. And so there are several things where the German that I am using is incorrect. It is Southern German rather than Northern German.
So it's basically just having a New Yorker say y'all.
Yeah, exactly. In this case, it was things like having an old woman in Berlin greet somebody by saying Grüß Gott, which is a very Southern thing that seemed entirely normal to the Southern German friends that I had read through this. So the nuances can be very, very specific.
An example that lots of our listeners will probably be familiar with, the TV show Firefly. Part of the world building for Firefly was that most of the business gets conducted in English, but when you want to curse, you curse in Chinese. And I was on a panel at a convention where we talked about how cool that was. And there was a linguist on the panel who said they got it all wrong because there's no way you would switch from the sloppy tonality and pitching of English to the very precise tonality of Chinese after several generations of having done it. Those things would have blended because that's just the way languages work. And the nuance here is that if the show had been filmed with people Americanizing Chinese profanity, it would have fallen flat for us. And many, many Chinese people probably would have been put out by the way this was done. And so the nuance there was linguistically, world-buildingly, yes, they got it wrong. But for the purposes of the show, they got it right.
Hey, writers, are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats, BEETS.com, and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Let's take a moment here for our book of the week. We are going to have a look at Maurice. You told us at the beginning of this class that you had 2 books come out this year. Let's talk about the second one, Unfadable.
Unfadable. Well, Unfadable is my second middle grade detective novel. It features a young lady, Bella Fades, who just wants to find the money to fund an arts project for herself and her community, during summer vacation, as one does. And then she gets embroiled in a series of neighborhood corruption and the politics of what goes on when it comes to figuring out money. And so she falls under the mentorship of a character. When I was writing him, I basically called him my retired Batman figure. and he mentors her, and so that he doesn't solve any of the problems for her. He gives her the tools that she can go continue the investigation on her own. And so she gets to go up against all the city powers and all that all on her own, because the book's all about agency and empowerment. And I want to plus I was inspired by one of my mentees, I ain't gonna lie. So she helped to inspire part of the story too. So it's just Unfadable. I really feel a lot about this book. I love it so much.
That's awesome. That is a middle grade detective story. called Unfadable by Maurice Broaddus. Mm-hmm. Go check it out.
And one of the things about writing middle grade books is you are, again, making a series of choices. One in term, and actually probably the biggest one that I ran into, because I just started another middle grade actually this week, and it's a historical middle grade that takes place on Indiana Avenue in the late 1930s. But it's the same challenge in terms of what does slang look like in these books? And so, because slang is a way that it's like any spice, right? If you put too much in, it can be overpowering. I think back to my first book series, Knights of Breton Court, and I have a lot of slang in that book. And in some ways that book, because of that, I lock some readers out. So that's one issue that pops up. But another issue is now I've dated that book. Because of the slang choices I made, that book is locked in time. So again, there's you sort of the considerations, the subtle considerations when it comes to language use.
Right. And then especially if you're doing something that is a secondary world or future, trying to come up with slang that seems appropriate to the era that feels like things have moved on and evolved. Like one of the things we were talking about on a break is, and this is, I promise this is related, is that I've taught my cat to use buttons to communicate. It's this whole thing, augmentative interspecies communication, AIC, you can check it out on Fluent Pet. That's all, it's cool and all of that. But here's the thing. My cat has 70 words that she can use, and she's still figured out how to curse with them. When she's mad at me, she calls me dog. When she's mad at a situation, she says litter box, which is basically, you know, that's the Bravo. Closest she has to, that's her fecal matter. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating to me about that is that what she did with the pejorative is she's like, what is something large and disreputable that I don't like? And that's dog. And with the other, it's like, what is something that's stinky and I don't like? And she goes to fecal matter. So like looking, you know, there are going to be certain things as you go forward that you can grab. And sometimes people will use the thing itself, and sometimes people will invert it. I love on Dan's middle grade audiobook series, the name of which I've just gone out of my head.
Zero G.
That golden is the way that kids say cool. It's like golden, and it makes sense as a natural progression of language. So it's, you know, when you're looking at nuance, there's so many layers of that. And also, the kid speaks just like a normal kid with this one word put in that sometimes you can evoke, to go back to the thing that Maurice talked about in our first episode, you can evoke the sense of slang and a shift in language without actually making the reader work through all of that the way they would in like Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. Which is, you know, a great example of how this principle exists on a spectrum, that at one end you have Clockwork Orange or Neuromancer or something that is going out of its way to create an entirely new linguistic environment for the story. And you have to really work to get into it. But once you're there, it feels comfortable and new. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have something like Zero G, which is just, I made up one new slang word. And other than that, everyone talks like they do today to hint at the difference. And none of those and every other point on the line between, all of those are good. All of those are valid. You just need to decide what effect you're going for and what is going to be the best way to create it.
And also what you as an author can sustain and will be enjoyable for you. Mm-hmm. Like if you really enjoy language creation, and go all in. If you don't, there's no reason we don't get paid enough, basically. So let me give you a couple of concrete tools to think about when we're thinking about nuance and dialogue, because I promised that I would do this when we were in our first episode. I mentioned pacing, accent, and attitude. So pacing or rhythm is the sounds that the flow of how the language comes out, and you control that with your punctuation. So roughly speaking, as an audiobook narrator, when I look at punctuation on the page, it's there to tell me when to pause and breathe. So a comma kind of represents, and this is very mechanical, comma kind of represents a 1 second pause. A period, I count for two, and a paragraph break, I count for three. And again, super mechanical in the real world, it's way more flexible than that. But when you're thinking about creating someone who speaks very rapidly and they don't really ever take a breath, take all the punctuation out. You get long run-on sentences. If someone speaks with short, choppy sentences, you put a lot of periods in. If you have a starship captain and there, then you can, you know, throw all of the ellipses in there that you want to throw in, or periods occasionally. Accent, which we talked about in terms of culture and nationality and class and age, accent comes down to word choice and sentence structure. That's how you represent that on the page. And then attitude is kind of all of the above. It's the rhythm with which we speak, which is represented by punctuation, and it's also the word choices. So the way you speak when you're happy is different than the way you speak when you're angry. And you can control the audience's perception of that through your punctuation, word choice, and sentence structure.
Awesome. Okay, so now we've got some homework to bring this all home. Before we do the homework, let me thank Maurice one more time for being here with us. You're fantastic. We love to have you on the show. This has been a really fun, deep dive into dialogue. So, Maurice, thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me. This has been great.
You're welcome back anytime. Now, Howard, bring us home with some homework.
Okay. You want a deep dive. Here we go. I want you to create word and phrase lists for your characters. Specifically, what we're looking for each character is a list of the words and phrases that are unique to them, that they are going to use, that you won't see from the other characters. Yes, it might be things like catchphrase, third thing here. I made that joke during our ensemble episode as well, reference to Free Guy. So yeah, it might be things like catchphrases. It might be verbal tics. A couple of times in this series, I've said, you know, wait, the three waits in a row. That might be a tic that is unique to one of your characters. So you make this list of things that are unique to each of your characters, and then you make a list of things that are, and this is especially important for an ensemble, expressions, words that they share that are perhaps unique to them, that you wouldn't hear from folks in a different group. Essentially, what you're doing here is writing a little mini dictionary that you can refer to, so that when you are writing dialogue and you get that spidey sense feeling that says, I don't know that the right character is saying this line, you can check your dictionary and find out exactly why that's happening.
There you go. This is Writing Excuses. You are out of excuses. Now go write.
For this episode of Writing Excuses, your hosts were Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, Maurice Broadus, and Howard Taylor. It was engineered by Daniel Thompson and mastered by Alex Jackson. To find more of Writing Excuses and support us, check out patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.